Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Adam Elliott, and I've got a massive megapod today. Maybe too many cooks are spoiling the broth. Maybe, we'll see. But I'm joined today by four people, a bunch of incredible hard and defensively sound podcasters. Their press is on point, and they are always lethal in front of goal. It's Dan, Hosty, and Martin. How are you, Martin? I'll start with you first.
I'm good, thank you. I've been a bit under the weather for the last couple of days, some sort of bug, but I'm fighting it off and I'm still ready to go. My kids have been ill with it all week and off school, so I've had more children to look after than normal. And yes, so other than that, I'm all good. How about you?
Yeah, I'm fantastic. I'm very, very well prepared for this, I promise. And I've eaten my tea, and that was very nice. I had sausage rolls and like loads of cheeses and toast and lots of just basically picky bits, and it was really nice. Hosty, how are you, and what have you eaten tonight?
I mean, we all know what I've already eaten. I'm sure we can all just take a round guess. I've had spag bol as always. You just sound like you've had like a bunch of carbs and cheese, which is great. I love that.
It was wonderful.
Did you do a sofrito? That's the question, Hosty.
What?
Onions, carrots, and celery.
Oh, absolutely not.
In the base?
Absolutely not.
Outrageous.
I can't be bothered cutting onions. Too much time, too much effort.
Oh, bloody hell.
Right. I keep meaning to buy chopped shallots for the freezer and stuff like that to then put in, and I just keep forgetting. Because apparently Belvita's take priority in my head.
Dan, how are you, mate?
I'm outraged at Hossie's cooking. Yeah, so anyway, But otherwise, I'm good. I'm a bit thrown by you calling me incredibly hard, but you know, we'll move on from that.
You've got saltburn on your mind.
At your age, that doesn't happen, does it?
No, not my age.
I guess we'll move on to the news section of the podcast. But yes, we are here today actually to do a double review. But before we do that, I just wanted to ask about Willy Nonto, because it looks like he's signing a new contract. Who wants to go first on that?
Yeah, I'll go first. I guess sort of like, I think he's had a new agent, hasn't he? And I think he's probably realised he was maybe a bit misled, because he's still been getting picked up, being picked for Italy, even though he's in the Championship. And I think that was kind of what his previous agent maybe said to him, that won't happen. But, you know, he was getting picked for Italy when he was in the Swiss League, which is a lower standard or similar standard to the Championship, probably. So, yeah, you know, I think it'll be good. He's obviously played a bit part this season. And yeah, I think that's more due to Somerville, because I think that's the position which Nonto is best at as well, on the left-hand side, even then he's played on the right-hand side when he's come on mainly. So yeah, I think it's good. Keep a player in and possibly keep some of his value that might have dropped just due to him being on a new contract as well. So yeah, I think it's a good idea all round.
I think it's possibly protecting us if we don't go up as well, because, I mean, you assume, don't you, that Somerville goes for quite a big fee in the summer if we don't go up. And if Nonto's in a good contract, we can convince him to stay. I think he's a good candidate for that kind of inside left position, isn't it, that Somerville's currently playing. So it's kind of good future-proofing in case of that. And if we go up, then yeah, we have to decide what we're doing with him long term.
I don't really have anything to add, that's why I'm not speaking.
Well, I'll start with you first, Martin, on the next piece of news, which is the injury news from the Norwich game last night. It was probably the only dampener on the game in total, but Dan James obviously went off at half-time after suffering a bit of a blow towards the back end of the first half. And then, obviously, Archie Gray was actually helped off by two of our medical staff, so that looked a bit more concerning. But Barker did seem to be implying that they might only miss one game. But how worried would you be if he had to miss any, or either of those had to miss any league games, I guess?
He'd be quite worried, to be honest, because both of them have been pretty key for us, and especially in Archie's position, we don't really have much other ailings left now. And so Jed Spencer's gone back to Spurs, so we've not got many right backs. And Archie himself isn't even a right back. So yeah, we will be left with just playing Jamie Shackleton. Is he fit at the moment? I'm not sure. But yeah, he's also another one who is injury prone. And Dan James has been key for us this year, scored a lot of goals, and I would never have thought I'd say that, yeah, I would like him to be fit and in the team. But wouldn't be as much of a worry for Dan, because we have got some other in the wider areas. We've got Jed Nantony and we've got Nonto. So Nonto's injured at the moment, but I'd imagine he'll probably be fit by the next league game. I hope so anyway. So at least we have some cover in Dan's position. But if Archie was to miss some games, then we would struggle to place him, I think.
Yeah, agree with Martin. I'm kind of worried about both positions. I mean, I guess Byron plays right back, doesn't he, at the moment, as long as Firpo stays fit. So that's perhaps not as bad a drop-off. But I do think there's a bit of a drop-off from Dan James in the current system and the current setup to whoever's playing right wing. I think we've not seen Nonto necessarily be as effective on the right. And Anthony came on yesterday, played on the right, and was a hit and miss, wasn't he, really? So yeah, I think there's a bit of a drop off from Dan James to the rest of the squad in terms of that particular role, not necessarily the level of player, I would say. So yeah, slight worry.
Yeah, and I want to do just say quickly that our thoughts really do go out to Jayden Anthony for what he's going through at the moment. Pretty horrible for a guy of his age. He's younger than me, and yeah, no, I couldn't imagine losing my mum at that age, so that's pretty horrendous. Hosty, just wanted to quickly ask you as well, are you particularly worried about Archie Gray or Dan James? There's one in particular more, perhaps?
Yeah, probably, like Dan was saying, the system at the moment with Dan James kind of staying out wide on the wing, and we don't really have that sort of right winger at the moment, because you're not going to move Somerville. So I do wonder if maybe it causes a bit more of a system rotation if both of them are out, and we maybe do see that Rotaire on the right and we have Perot and Bamford, and then, you know, Byram on the right will become your kind of wide player in that way, and we see a bit of a change going forward if they're both out. But yeah, I think the big if of Junior Firpo's fitness carries a lot of weight as well, regarding how comfortable I am with Gray being injured.
Yeah, and to be honest, Sam Byram's fitness as well. Let's not forget that. Although it's been a lot better this season than probably a lot of us were expecting, it's still had a bit of patchiness to it. Yeah, I'm not going to talk too much about transfer stuff, but obviously we know the club have been looking at fullbacks in this window, and hopefully we sign one or two before the end of the window. We actually have one more podcast between now and then, so we might have more to say during that one, but we'll leave that for now for the news section. And we'll move on straight into, yes, it was a little bit of a time ago now, the Preston game, but we'll talk about that now. I'll talk about the game summary, which is that Leeds started the game with their usual 4-2-3-1 structure, with Preston opting for a 3-5-2 shape. The game got off to a bad start for Leeds, with Preston scoring from a very early set piece, with Liam Miller setting up Will Keane in only the second minute to open the scoring for Preston. However, this scoreline didn't last very long, with Leeds quickly equalising in the sixth minute, with Dan James heading home from a Junior Firpo cross. Leeds had the greater share of possession throughout the rest of the first half. However, Preston did have spells where they possessed the ball too. Leeds also created more chances throughout the half, but neither team were able to go ahead. The second half continued largely the same as the first half had ended, with Leeds having more of the ball and creating a number of scoring chances, with Preston unable to make their possession they did have pay off, with Preston only having one shot to Leeds having 11 in the end. Just when Leeds fans were expecting the game to end as a draw, a penalty was awarded for a handball in the 94th minute, with Joel Perreault dispatching it and the game ending 2-1 to Leeds. Right, we'll get right on into it then. What was going on in the first half to stop us from getting further ahead? We had most of the ball, but weren't able to create any big chances. I'm going to ask you first, Martin.
So yeah, in the first half, Preston were, I think, maybe a bit more aggressive than what we was maybe expecting them to be. I know there was a little bit of a debate in the preview as to how they were going to approach it, because they had had some games recently, especially I think it was against Chelsea in the Cup, where they were pressing higher, but then they also had other games where they were a bit more of a low block. So it was, we weren't sure what was going to happen, and I think Preston were quite aggressive in the way they were setting up against us. So I think maybe that caught my surprise a little. So in the first half, we did struggle to make more of the game than what we maybe should have done, because they were coming at us quite aggressively and they weren't leaving space behind. But at the same time, they were doing a good job at blocking passing angles, especially to our midfield players. So especially Camara was being tightly marked, Routier was being tightly marked. So it did mean that those players in particular, who are quite essential to the way we get forward, weren't able to contribute as much as what they would do normally. And whenever Rutter had received the ball, he was very quickly surrounded by two players, which means that a lot of the stuff that he was trying wasn't coming off. And especially in the first half, that really did make us struggle really to get any inroads into their half. Obviously, the game started off pretty hectic with two goals being scored quite quickly, so there wasn't really much in way of game state to take into account because of how quickly both the goals were scored. Game state didn't have a chance to really come into it, so that wouldn't be it for me. And yeah, I think that's mainly it for me. I'm not sure if Dan had anything different or he spotted anything different to that.
Well, I was just thinking back to the game on Boxing Day at their place, and they kind of did a good job, didn't they, pinning us against the touchline and, you know, putting all the game in one half of the pitch, or the other half. And I think there was a bit of that going on in this game a little bit. So they kind of had a front three, didn't they? But it was quite narrow. So they were almost letting our centre-backs go around the outside of their front three and go down the flanks, and then they just fold over and pin us down. And I think they were just basically saying, well, if we do break them down from there, we're going to be crossing from wide. And they're an absolute unit of a team, aren't they? They're massive, you know, great big centre-backs. And I think they were just largely confident of defending their box in the, you know, from aerial attacks. I mean, obviously, our goal came from that. But otherwise, I think they defended anything coming from wide well. So I guess it was just probably just tactics on their part that they, like, let us go wide and then just try to fold over and go, you know, onto that touchline and be quite aggressive from there. That was just kind of how I saw it, really, first half.
Did anything change in the second half then for you, Dan, as there were much better chances created in that half?
Yeah, in the kind of first half of the second half, Leeds had a few chances, didn't we? We came out fairly well, and I just kind of thought we went a bit more direct down the middle, a bit quicker. So we played it to Bamford, and we were able to get, he was able to lay it off, and then there'd be a quick ball through, and James would run onto it or whatever. So it just felt like we got quite direct and played more central, really, and they just struggled to handle that kind of direct pace in behind. So that was it, really. I think it was just really, really simple. It was just like we'd play the ball to midfield and ping it quickly forward, and it just took them a while to kind of adapt to that. It kind of took their front press out, didn't it, really? And, you know, we were able to just get behind them. I felt that they then adjusted midway through the second half and probably dropped off and started playing more of a low block where they'd been aggressive-ish before that, you know, not pure low block before that. So I just felt that was it. And then, you know, and the game got really stodgy, didn't it? As the further the game developed, the more bad-tempered it got, the more fouls they were making, the more the game got broken up and stopped and all that kind of stuff. So I think it was just that, you know, we kind of came out well, hurt them a bit, and they adapted and, like, tried to kill the game. And, you know, and that kind of killed how we were kind of hurting them in that first part of the second half.
Yeah, I totally agree. That felt like the spell of dominance for us to, like, take advantage, and we didn't quite manage to do it. We had a couple of pretty good chances, especially that Dan James lob that just went over the bar, for example, and then we didn't. And like you say, it really did stodge up again. Is that how you saw it as well, Martin?
Yeah, I read it pretty much exactly the same way that Dan did, to be honest, for the second half. They definitely did drop off halfway through that half, which did mean that we were able to pin them in and really get some dominance around their box. And we were able to create some things in that time. But yeah, it was one of the things, we just weren't able to get it done for a long time. And I think we were quite fortunate when the penalty came, to be honest, because I don't think we was going to get that breakthrough otherwise, especially not because it was very late. So yeah, we were quite fortunate in that penalty was given, in my opinion. But it's good that we scored it, if you consider when we talked about penalties in the previous week. Quite a lot. Dan got some stats up and whatnot, and now we scored a penalty the week after, so that was quite an amazing little anecdote.
Don't have the stats to hand, but Perreault's record in the Championship and the penalty spot across Swansea and Leeds must be pretty good, to be honest. he seems to be pretty cold in those situations. I don't even think he hits that as well as maybe he'd like to, but wrong foot's the keeper and it goes in, so it doesn't really matter. But obviously he doesn't hit it right in the corner. I think recently, and this goes for some other games we've had, we've seen some interesting things that have been happening in our deep build-up, especially because we've now got Gruev, Gruyff in the team, and especially with the centre-backs and the way Ampadu's been playing. Could you talk us through those a little bit, Martin?
Yeah, so it's been a lot very interesting the way the build-up has been changing with different players in there. So that's from Ampadu at centre-back now and Gru in midfield. So there's a bit of a difference to the way Gru looks at this midfield role, and he especially drops into the centre of these two centre-backs more often than what Ampadu was, and that kind of gives Ampadu more license to carry the ball forward. So there was less of that being seen. I think Ampadu was mainly looking to occupy midfielders for a little bit further forward than what Gru was. And Strauch got forward in that way because he was playing those midfielders, and Strauch was getting into that space. It's a little bit different than the way it's working in this, but I think it's been probably a little more effective in certain ways. It's definitely different, and I'm enjoying it. And especially because of the way Gru looks to pass the ball around the back, and they really just do well at getting the ball from not just the left to the right as well. Something which we've struggled to do at times throughout the season is get the ball up to the right more. And I think he's been better at doing that than what Ampadu was, in my opinion. And I'm not sure what anyone else thinks about that little bit there.
Yeah, I think it's probably because he's not the only reason, but left-footed, so he's picking the ball up in those central spaces and he's naturally wanting to play it over to the right, isn't he? So there's just an element of that, I think. But I think just by his very nature, he's more of an expansive passer than Ampadu anyway, irrespective of the left foot, right foot thing. So yeah, I agree. I'll tell you what's interesting, just a bit of an interesting thought. If Strauch was fit and Gruyff was playing the six, do we think the same thing would happen?
About to ask that, but you go for it.
Sorry, I'm doing your job. I'm not too sure because Ampadu's almost left-back, isn't he? Like an old-fashioned left-back in build-up. You know, not bombing on, but he's kind of really, he's over towards the touchline. You know, do we see Strauch doing that? That's really interesting. I don't know. I'm just wondering.
You know, I think this is an interesting point in general, this part of the team. Because we seem to have a few more options now that we've realised that Ampadu can play that centre-back role so well as well. I think there's questions to be asked of whether you could try a Gruyff and Ampadu sort of midfield pivot, and maybe Ampadu's a slightly more advanced player because I think he's got slightly better press resistant qualities and carrying qualities that I think he could do well there. And I don't really want to see Gruyff come out of the team at the moment. And I do think Kamara's been a bit off the boil, but obviously Strauch needs to come back in some capacity. It depends on the angles. I think that when having Gruyff and Strauch in the same sort of area of the pitch and both playing in a sort of similar way, in the way that they can build up the ball, and they're both left footed, it might get all a bit congested perhaps, but I'm also curious, as you've just said there, maybe I'm Strauch to do that role if Gruyff come out of the team as well. So I think Farke is going to be very happy that he's got options here, especially with the situation regarding Charlie Cresswell at the moment. Hostia, I'll put this one to you. Do you want to answer Dan's question if you can remember what it was?
Yeah, I think sort of like Ampadu can probably do the eight sort of role a little bit. As you said, Kamara's... There's a question that's going to be a little bit similar in the Norwich bit, which I want to talk about regarding our build-up in deep with Gruyff and Ampadu at centre-back. But yeah, I think it obviously calls for different dynamics. And if we kind of play the same way that we are now, there's issues with it which are away from the centre-backs, I think, in the deep build-up, which I'll obviously get onto. So yeah, it'd be interesting. I don't know exactly how it does work, but yeah, I don't think you can drop Gruyff. But at the same time, Strauch was like obviously best centre-back probably in the squad at the time, with regards to his on-ball and his progression from that position and area. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Do we have a game coming up when Strauch comes back that we can maybe test this sort of theory? Do we have the leeway to test? I don't know. Do we just stick to what we know? Does it just mean that we can actually rest Ampadu going forward, and actually give him 30 minutes, give Gruyff 30 minutes instead of 5 now that we know that he can sustain it in the Premier League, in the Championship?
I have something on this as well, that this possibility, that the fact that Strauch actually has played at left back this year. You know, it's not something which maybe we'd want to see, but considering we're quite low on fullbacks and Strauch does have experience playing in the Premier League, left back even, would that be something that maybe to look at. I don't think it would be, but it is a potential thing which I think has to be taken into account because he has played there for a significant time, and that was probably his best time of the season last year, was when Strout was playing at left back before the World Cup. He was probably one of our only players who came out with any kind of credit in that first part of the season, playing at left back. And obviously, it maybe be a little bit different to what you'd want in this side from left back, because at the moment the left back is the high and wide one. But you could solve that by having the left back reverting back to the way it was at the start of the season and being the deeper third centre back kind of. And then on the right you could have say Byron being the high and wide right back. And that's obviously something we know that he can do well. And he's done pretty well being the high and wide left back, but being the high and wide right back will be even better for him because he's right footed, of course. So it would give us extra angles cross into the box. And he'd probably be more effective being the high and wide right-back rather than the high and wide left-back. So it's just something to think of.
I totally agree with all that and think that it might happen at some stage. At the same time, I do think Farke absolutely adores Pascal Strauch. I think he loves him. And I think he'll play him at centre-back as much as possible. But if there is any kind of crisis, or even if it's just an odd game where we wanted to try something a little bit different, then yeah, I totally agree that that could be something we could see. Definitely an interesting one going forward. I think that's an area of the pitch that I'm feeling really good about at the moment. So, but yeah, let's talk about Preston now again in the second half. They barely created anything. Was this down to us out of possession, or was it down to Preston making more of what they had? Dan, I'll start with you.
I just don't think Preston carry any threat if you kill Miller, which is what our guest said the other day. kill him. No, I mean, I think Archie did a way better job, didn't he, than he did at Deepdale on this game. And I think he got way more support around him, which I think was a big factor in him struggling against Miller at Deepdale. So I just think we were better prepared for their threats. And we're superb at defending our box, aren't we, and keeping teams out of, you know, the zone 14, zone 15, whatever it is. So I think, A, we kept them out of those kind of dangerous areas. And the big threat was Miller. So he scored the goal early, didn't he? And then he had a decent shot that Melier saved early in the game, if I'm remembering rightly. Maybe I'm misremembering. But that was it. Then we shut him down. So I just feel like they don't carry a lot of threat generally, apart from set pieces and Miller. And I think we handled both. After the goal, we handled both elements pretty well.
To be clear, he set up the goal, not scored it. But yeah, you're basically right about everything else. Martin, anything you want to add?
He did, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I'd agree with what Dan said. Preston don't really offer too much in possession when you were able to cross Muller and stop him from being effective. And I felt Roden especially was giving some really excellent support down that side to Archie. And sometimes when Archie was a little bit further forward and then we just turned over the ball, he was trying to get quickly into that area to stop Miller from getting the box and giving good support to Archie. So that, and that also showed out on the heat map which we shared of Roden. That was, it showed a lot of presence around the right back area. So it was just showed that he was really giving support to Archie, which was good to see. And we just did a good job of handling Miller, which meant that we handled their main threat and they weren't really able to do anything in the second half.
I mean, the other thing is, if Grove's sitting in there, and it means Rodon's got a bit more scope to get out the right anyway, you know, in that respect. So probably just helps with the general shape, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because an element as well.
Because quite often with Grove dropping in between centre backs, that means that both centre backs can be a little bit wider. So it's almost like a back three. So it's just that little bit more spread out. So when we do turn over the ball, Rodon's better positioned to help in that area. So yeah, I agree with that.
And to give Preston their credit, because even though they didn't offer that much in possession in the second half, they did, like we say, make things pretty difficult and stodgy in that last half an hour. And it did look like they were going to hold on for a point in the end. But we did have a question about that from one of our patrons, Kieran Healy, who asked, how much did the horrific refereeing performance play into their game plan and overall stodginess of the game? I'll start with you, Martin.
You can't really deny it, can you? The referee didn't have a great game at all. He was calling things when they weren't fouls. He was not calling things which were fouls, and it's generally a bad game. And Preston had a clear game plan and was to be basic football terrorists. I put it that way in Discord. I'm not going to shove it and say it differently.
Repeat your tweet for the audience as well.
I can't remember Preston. I can't remember exactly what I said.
The most EFL yeah, that's side.
It.
Yeah.
But the EFL-iest side to have ever EFL'd. That is very true, and I stand by it. I thought maybe I'd see something different in the rewatch. Sometimes that happens, but no. They didn't look to play with the ball, especially in the second half. In the first half, they were trying it a bit more, and it wasn't quite as terrorist. But in the second half, it was full on Osama bin Laden, really. And yeah, so I can't really say much more, but I agree with what Kieran says.
It reminded me a bit of a couple of the Wolves games we had in the Premier League. That's what it reminded me of. And the diving and the playing for fouls and fouling us constantly. I think they had 6 yellow cards by the end of the game, which kind of told its own story a little bit. Dan, did you want to add anything on their football terrorism that we watched?
Yeah, well, there was definitely a ramp up of that in the second half, because I was at the game and it was really, really grumpy atmosphere and grumpy everything. It was just grumpy Ellen Road. And yeah, there were 3 yellow cards in the first half, but I didn't think the first half was particularly terroristy, if that makes sense. But second half, straight away, they had like 2 fouls, I think, like within 3 minutes. They fouled, you know, with quite heavy fouls. So just they obviously set the stall out to come out and kick Leeds. Another factor, I'm not sure how much it came across on the telly, but definitely felt like a factor at the ground, was like the wind. It was really, really, like really windy, and it really affected the way the ball was flowing. So it's almost like you've got Preston shithousing Leeds, and like the wind shithousing any football as well. It's just another factor that stopped any kind of really good flow. The amount of passes that didn't quite get to the recipient, or they had to hold position to get the ball and then go. So it just, nothing flowed quite the same. You know, just those little things like that. I mean, the one where Dan James broke through in the keeper and the keeper handled it outside the area. I mean, that ball should have got to the keeper, and I think the wind held it up. So it kind of worked in our favour, really, in that respect. But just to put it into context. So yeah, I think the wind, probably a factor on top of it, on top of Preston being like horrific EFL bastards.
That's a good way to put it.
And how much of like EFL they did, Johnny Cooper did a really good tweet regarding the fact
great stuff.
Preston committed 40 fouls across the 2 games at Deepdale and Elland Road, which is the most of any team across both games over the past 3 years. So it just kind of shows how much they kind of, in both, because they actually committed more fouls at Deepdale than they did at Elland Road as well. It was 22 to 18. So it kind of probably shows what Farker was talking about after the game as well, that, you know, Deepdale hurt, and so the players kind of like had a bit between the teeth for this game.
I just found my note. In the second half, they gave away 2 fouls within the first 30 seconds of the game, and Lowe, I've got here Lowe gesticulating is my note. So he was like into his players, it happened in front of him, and he was straight away into them, you know, like winding them up. So I definitely felt like it's something he'd said to them at half time and to wind them up and get them going, I definitely think.
Well, yeah, it must be if the stat about the 2 games is true, which obviously it will be, which is pretty crazy, but also not that surprising. And although I did give credit to Preston a minute ago, I just got myself a bit wound up listening back to all of this and reminding myself just how many fouls they were putting in on us and how, I guess, aggressive they were being on quite a few individuals that we feel like we need to protect. It's okay, Martin, back down. It's over now. They're not hurting Georgie anymore. But yeah, it was a pretty horrible game by the end. And I guess we had the last laugh, didn't we, with the penalty, which, by the way, Ryan Lowe, I know you're not listening to this, but it was a effing penalty. And he had a big old moan. He's still going on about it today, by the way, in his press conference today. So, yeah, there you go.
Before we move on to the next bit, I wanted to say that how disgusting it was, the yellow card for Georgia for diving. There was definite contact in that, and I'm still aggrieved by it. Still aggrieved.
I agree. And a few people in the Discord didn't agree with it, but I think he was probably expecting more contact than came than what he actually got, but it was still a foul, definitely, even though he didn't get as much as maybe he was expecting. But I understand why players go down like that sometimes, because they're just expecting to have their legs completely swiped, so they kind of start moving away from that as soon as they can, and that's why it looked like a dive, but it wasn't. Anyway, we are going to move on to the Norwich section now, which might be a little bit longer than the Preston one because it's a bit fresher in the mind. But before we do that, it's time for an ad break. But before that happens, I have to plug the patron. He's not here today, even though just about every podcaster is, but Tom Alderson would kill every single one of us if we didn't do this, so I'm going to do it now. Don't worry, patrons, you don't have to listen to this part. Anyway, yes, our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts, and if you want to pay a little more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, other articles that we'll put out, videos, and bonus podcasts as well. So if you want to find out more about that, please visit Martin.
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Yeah, don't go visit Martin. Go visit that website.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now we'll move on into the Norwich section, which is that Leeds started the game in their usual 4-2-3-1 formation, with Norwich opting for the same shape. Leeds edged the possession battle throughout the first half and took the lead in the 16th minute when Patrick Bamford headed in a beautiful Dan James cross from deep. Norwich had a few spells of possession throughout the first half and created one good chance from Gabriel Sarri right at the end of the half, but weren't able to score from it, and the first half ended 1-0 to Leeds. Norwich then had the majority possession in the start of the second half, keeping hold of the ball for large periods of the half. However, they weren't able to advance the ball into a box to create any serious chances. Leeds looked to hit Norwich in transition and created a number of good opportunities, but weren't able to extend the lead, and the game ended 1-0 to Leeds for our fourth victory of 2024. Now, quickly, just before I dive in, I just want to say we've just moaned a bit about referees and how awful they are. I cannot believe at 1-0 in the last minute of the game, he's pulled the game back when we could have made it 2-0 because their goalkeeper was up. That was that was horrendous. But
that was egregious. Totally egregious.
Yeah, because it was Routier on the ball as well, so he probably would have scored or got an assist.
There was Routier, Bamford and Somerville, weren't they, I think?
Yeah. Absolutely ridiculous. One of the worst decisions of the season, but it obviously didn't matter because it didn't cost us anything other than a goal. But if we now don't go up by one goal, well, anyway. We had the majority of the possession in that first half, as I mentioned. However, we created just the one big chance. Was this down to Norwich defending well? I'm going to start with you, Hosty.
No, I think it was more down to us just not really creating that final ball, that final chance. There were quite a few times that we got forward and got the ball across, and there were kind of nothing really happening. But I actually thought that Norwich had a lot more of the ball than I thought they did in the first half. From kind of like, 'cause I missed the first half originally, so when I rewatched today, I was kind of like, oh, they had probably more of the ball than I anticipated, given the kind of reviews that we had. But obviously, like, one of the chances which won't go down as a big chance is like the overhead kick from Bamford, whereas kind of if he leaves that, then you've probably got Dan James in a better position to score again. So those sort of things where we created the chance but it's not a big chance, there were quite a few of those moments I felt. And yeah, so I think really it was down to us not putting the end product on chances in the first half.
Martin?
I'd disagree. I thought Norwich were quite good in the first half. I thought they were doing a good job at holding their block quite well. So we weren't sure how they were going to be approaching this. I won't go into it too much, but I just felt that they did a good job in stopping us from creating good chances. Yeah, I think there's a certain thing that we could do better in final third, but I also think that they did do a good job of making us funnel it over into wide areas, and they were this pretty solid overall in the first half and made us work to create chances. And we did create one, and we could say two if we count the overhead kick. But I think still, that's a good amount of work. Say we had quite a lot of the ball. Norwich had some spells of possession as well, like Hossie mentioned, more than I remembered as well when I rewatched. And yeah, I just sort of felt that I needed to give a little bit of credit. Maybe not 100% of the credit, but 75%.
Just quickly on that, were you a little surprised by their setup in the end? Because ended up being a 4-4-2 with Gabriel Sarri actually pressing as one of the two out of possession in the attack, and McLean was alongside Nunez, the base, and it was kind of pressed like that. And then, like you say, we were funneled into wider areas. Obviously, we scored from that, which was fine. But
that seems to be what it was, right? And I was a bit surprised by that, were you?
Yeah, I was. I was expecting them to be a lot deeper than what they were. And especially when we saw the lineup, we're all saying, oh, definitely a 3-4-3. They dropped Barnes to the bench. Definitely a 3-4-3, but no, it wasn't. They had the 4-4-2 out of possession shape and more of a 4-2-3-1 when they had the ball. Sarah would drop deeper when they had the ball. Almost became nearly like a 4-3-3 when they had the ball, actually. So you would have McLean being the deep player, dropping in between the centre-backs, almost creating a back three at times. There's quite a lot of similarities to the way they look to build up to what we do, in honesty. And it's one thing I've noticed quite often. I wonder if it's a German thing. Who knows? But yeah, it did definitely surprise me that they didn't go for the low block 3-4-3 that we were expecting.
Dan, do you have anything to add?
I just wonder if they their analysts saw Preston largely do a good job at kind of not completely nullifying leads and kind of had quite a similar block in terms of the shape. You know, they kind of seeded the wide area, didn't they, to Leeds, and let Leeds go around Norwich a bit, but like it wasn't particularly dangerous for them, was it, in that first period? So I suspect it's a bit of that. Maybe, you know, you've got a quick turnaround from the weekend's game, so they just thought, right, we'll take a similar approach. That was my thought, really.
And Hosty?
I very much I won't lie, lads, I very much focused on us in possession with how we were setting up, sort of thing, in this game. The running order wasn't quite complete, so I wasn't sure what needs to sort of focus on one thing myself. So the out of possession stuff of Norwich I didn't really focus on. But yeah, I think kind of what they were saying rings true. It was just, I felt that the chances that we kind of nearly made were down to us, and Norwich just looked solid as, like, okay. I just don't think it was that they defended too well. I think we made too many mistakes sometimes.
Yeah, fair enough. I'll stay with you on the Norwich stuff then. They also struggled to create anything that meaningful beyond that Sarah chance. That was just before half time that he put wide. But how did you feel we did out of possession in the first half in sort of defending against that?
Yeah, I think in both halves we did really well at kind of staying really solid. I think I can't remember who, but I think it was Dan, you put it in the admin chat today, of who had Daniel Farker having a solid defensive structure on the bingo card for the season. And yeah, you know, they tried to move it around us, and we shuffled across in like a nice 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1 sort of structure. Kamara and Groove did really well. There was one moment, I think it was early in the second half, and Somerville had made the break, hadn't quite got back, and I noticed like Cruyff was kind of screaming. He was having to cover over to the left, and he did that really well. He did it in the first half as well. Gray had got caught out early on, and he came over and helped him out there. And then Gray did a really good job of actually starting to cover on Borja Sainz as well. I felt like out of possession, we were really good in both halves. Like I said, that one which Sarah put wide was a bit like Bamford's against Leicester last season, kind of the exact same position. Kind of dropped to him, and then he just scuffed it. Well, Bamford put it over, he scuffed it wide, didn't he? I thought we were pretty good.
Yeah, and obviously now we'll talk about the second half a little bit more. And we had a question from Matthew Noah Smith on Twitter. He said, why were Norwich able to hold possession for such a long spell? Was it bad tactics, poor play, or an absence of aggression? Martin, I'll come to you first in just a second, but I have to say that just on what Hossie's been talking about our out-of-possession play and what Dan's said about it was in the group chat on the bingo card, it certainly wasn't something I had on. We've basically done this quite a lot this season. I've always felt like in terms of our defensive shape and when we have to defend deep, we've done really well. We've got quite a few defenders that are very good at box defending. Joe Roden being one, he was pretty outstanding in this game. But in general, we keep the numbers down, don't we? So the XG in the second half was particularly low, wasn't it? I think you might have the numbers to hand.
Yeah, so it was 0.03 in the second half, and they had one shot. That's it. So we did a fantastic job. And it's on Matthew Noah Smith's question. I actually think it was a concerted effort by us to not be as aggressive. That's the way it felt to me, because there were times where we weren't pressing at all, and we sort of dropped Kamara deeper into the block rather than having him part of the forward press. So we were in their half. We pretty much just had Bamford, Anthony, and Somerville. So it was kind of like a 4-3-3 when they had the ball in deeper areas. And then as it would serve down, Somerville would drop into the midfield three. So it would be more of a 4-4-2. Rutter would, well, maybe in a 4-4-1-1, Rutter would just sometimes be in central midfield rather than being in the sort of attacking midfield pressing spot. So I do think it was a conscious effort by us to maybe allow Norwich to possess the ball and to try to look to hit them in transition. But I think maybe we weren't expecting them to maybe keep hold of the ball as well as what they did. We did try a few times to get the ball out and to hit them in transition, but they got the second ball and swept up and kept hold of it. I think it was from the 51st minute through to the 61st. So it was a good 10-minute spell where we didn't have any concerted possession of the ball. And there were a good long period where they had the ball without us touching it.
But yeah,
ultimately, they didn't do anything with it. Not a single thing. And
yeah,
people in the group chat were panicking. Even Hobbsy was panicking. And I was pretty
Some
sure
of us were calm.
It.
I was calm.
I was calm. And there were some people were panicking, and I was just like, eh.
This is what, that's what I mean about box defending. Yep.
Yeah, we just we so easy. Never looked uncomfortable. And that continues from the first half when Norwich had those spells of possession. They didn't really create anything from them. The one thing that Norwich do threaten me with is transitions and set pieces. That's where they got both of their goals from in the previous fixture, I believe. The one goal came from Shane Duffy from a header from corner. And then it was Sarah, I believe, in a transitional attack, maybe. But yeah, so those are the main two things which threaten me with Norwich. But having concerted possession, they don't threaten me as much. I don't think that's the way they're set up to attack, and they were able to create more in the first game because we were looking to press them a lot more aggressively and failing, which was awful in the reverse fixture. And in this, we made a conscious effort to not press them and hold shape and be solid and hard to break down, and it absolutely worked. They just could not do anything.
Dan, do you have something to say here?
I do think there was an issue with like our energy. I think obviously we were looking pretty tired. This was again apparent in the ground, and I think it was possibly we were kind of dropping off and just saving our energy, and just sort of shuffling, happy to just kind of show them around, really, if that makes sense. It's probably like a 2 games a week thing as well. Like our more aggressive pressing performances have come when we've had a week, I think, between games. So it's probably an element of that. And we were just happy letting them have the ball and play around us. And I do think Norwich played some pretty good stuff as well. You have to give them credit for playing some nice build-up. They were rotating the ball really well and dragging our midfield out and then running through the gaps and stuff. So kind of a bit of both, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, I think also what happened was every time we kind of put in a clearance, we didn't really make it go anywhere, so the ball stayed in play.
Yeah.
And we only had like Bamford or Rutter were out, and it kind of went to them, and they kind of hounded, really counter-pressed really well when we cleared that to win the ball back. I think a lot of that possession was much more down to us not being able to make the ball stick due to their counter-press, and then they kind of just held it, so we just held our position and just said, okay, let's let them have this, let's keep doing this until they tire, because I think that's basically what happened then after, because from 60 minutes on was when we started creating a bit more as well.
I love when you steal my point. I literally was about to say that word for word. I'm not joking about the counter-pressing. I thought they were really good at that. I think that we have to give them a bit of credit. I think that even when we didn't try to just clear the ball out and we actually tried to build it up again, they were straight on us in that spell, and it made it really difficult. And even some of our better ball players were struggling to get the ball out and to make it stick, like Hostie says. So I have to give Norwich a bit of credit there. And I think that really worked well for them, apart from the fact that, like Martin's mentioned, they didn't do anything. And then at that point, I think maybe some of our players kind of realised a little bit, like, yeah, no, you can have the ball. You're not getting past us. And I loved that. I think that part of our team, that aspect of being so solid, is probably the most underappreciated thing. And that's why I wasn't worried when we were pinned a little bit. I think if you're pinned for 10 minutes, it can look a little bit concerning. And if they'd carried on doing that for the rest of the game, yeah, we probably would have eventually conceded a chance or two and they might have taken one. But defending like that for a little bit, and just keeping ourselves compact, and then eventually we ride out that storm and can get out of it, on the other side of it. And then we actually made some chances of our own. It was absolutely perfect. But yeah, the only thing I wanted to say is that during that 10-minute spell, we created the two best chances, and that's the funniest part for me. Because even though we didn't get out that often, the couple of times that we did, that we had a couple of decent shots, and they basically did nothing. Like Martin said, the XG for them was absolutely abysmal in that second half. And yeah, I do find that quite funny that, we let them come onto us, probably partly because we thought we can transition here ourselves, and we did that well. So that was really pleasing for me. even though Norwich did a good job of pinning us for a little bit. I just wanted to talk a little bit more about Patrick Bamford, because we've now seen him for 5 games in a row, which I don't think many of us were probably expecting. Maybe at some point we maybe expecting Farquhar to actually go and drop him for at least a game. And maybe we will see that this weekend in the FA Cup. I think all of us are hoping probably for that. He's become crucial to us in and out of position, I would say, as the sort of line leading focal point. Even though I think a few people have picked up on this, and I think I do agree, he did look a little bit like he was a bit leggy towards the end. Maybe his body is not quite what it used to be, so he's not going for those lung busting sort of runs of pressing as much as he used to in the Bielsa days, but he still is so crucial, isn't he, Dan?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't necessarily think he's a player he was, but yeah, it's just that profile makes like a world of difference to this team, doesn't it? Like occupying centre-backs, sort of, I keep making the point about giving us depth to our attack. He's, you know, he's looking to run in behind and that makes space for our creative players to operate in, sort of between the lines and stuff. So, yeah, and I just think having Dan James and him giving us that kind of outlet or focal point, whatever you want to, you know, is really handy for Rutter and Somerville. So yeah, it's just, that's super important systematically, and like I think we need to think really, really hard about that in the summer, no matter what league we're in. But that's another podcast. But yeah,
you'd drop him, wouldn't you, for Plymouth?
I would totally drop him for Plymouth. Yeah, I would probably give Joseph a run actually. So I think he has some of those profile. You know, I think he probably will finish up like that kind of nine. So I'd give him a run and see how he goes.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask this question, Hosty, because I've got a bit more of a sample size for it now. I wonder what your take is on Pat Bamford.
Yeah, obviously, I think he's made a massive difference to the way we've played, and I think that's clearly come across in our results. You know, unbeaten this year so far, 100% win rate as well. And yeah, I obviously shared a graphic showing the difference of when Rutter played nine between game week 2 and game week 25, just about 24. Or match 24, should I say. And then the 4 games that Bamford's had, and there's a clear difference in central penalty area actions and touches. So heat maps are based off the touches and actions, because we don't have GPS data sort of thing. So you have to kind of go off where footballing actions are occurred. And there's a clear difference of that Rutter's kind of drifts out to the left a little when he was playing nine. Probably he did that so that Perrault could drop in and have that space a bit more. But obviously Bamford really tries to push that a little bit more, and I think we shared off the Allstats We account as well his shot maps since coming in, and all three of his goals are basically from the exact same area, which is inside the 6-yard box, which is a massive difference and something which we haven't had all season. Yeah, and I think he, like Dan said, he gives us that different profile that we've missed. Yeah, I'd like to drop him or rest him. Let's say rest. Dropping sounds like dropping him. I'm not wanting to knock him out, and I'm not wanting to lose his place due to bad form. I'd give him a rest, because obviously he scored that goal against Peterborough, and the first thing he said on his own podcast was, yeah, my dad texted me asking me how my hips were. So like, you know, how are they now? Sort of thing.
Yeah, Martin, after everything Hossie's just said, we should play Perrault as number 9, shouldn't we? As soon as the league games start up again, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. He knows how to score goals. That's the only important thing for being a number 9, right? That's all that matters, is scoring goals. Yeah. But no, Bamford is back, baby. He's back. Patrick Bamford is back. Oh, I'm so happy about this, honestly. All of us in all starts that we obviously are big Bamford lovers, but a few had started to lose faith that he would ever. I admit I was pretty much there as well. And he's seemed like he's back. And I don't want to jinx it too much, because it could happen that he gets injured again. But yeah, he's just showing such good form. And he was definitely tired in this game against Norwich, especially in the second half, and which is understandable. He's just not used to playing multiple games a week. And this was the first time that he's really tried to do that since he's come back into the team. So yeah, just give him a rest versus Plymouth, please. Daniel, don't play him in that at all. Don't even put him on the bench. Don't bring him at all. Just let him stay at home. Just let him chill. Let him record a podcast. That's all he needs to do on that day. He doesn't need to do anything else.
Get him on comms.
Yeah, that'd be beautiful. Yeah, that'd be
a throwback. Which game was it that he did on comms? He did a game a couple of years ago, didn't he? Or like Forest or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember which one it was, but that was fun. I enjoyed Pat on comms. He's great on the like.
Yeah, I have to say, I thought he might be thought it might be broken, but it turns out he's only slightly broken and we can still play him. But yeah, we do need to rest him. We need to be very, very careful, patch him up and, like you say, wrap him in cotton wool and record a podcast or something like that. Just something else. Just don't be there. I don't mind. Oh, sorry, Dan might not like this, but I don't mind if we lose to Plymouth. I really don't. I think the league games matter much more. The worst case scenario is probably going to be that we draw with Plymouth. We play a weakened team, we draw, and then Daniel Farker probably takes it more seriously in the second leg and plays a pretty strong team. And that just would not be very good. I don't really want to have to go on another trip in February to Plymouth when we've already got one. So I don't want to do another one. And it'll probably be a midweek game as well. So it'll be a late game. Anyway, we'll end on something we've kind of touched on a little bit, but we should talk a little bit more about. This is now the third game in a row in which Ilya Gruev, I'm going to go with Gruev, I don't care, I'm going to stick with it because I've heard three different pronunciations and I don't care anymore.
Bryn Law said three different pronunciations on exactly. The TV commentary in the last game, so in Norwich
I'm
game.
Sick of it. Gruev, fine.
I'm so annoyed with the Leeds United podcast. They had him on and didn't ask him, like, what were they playing at?
They did for Perot, and then I'm still saying it wrong. It was Peru. Yeah. Anyway, it's the third game in a row in which he's started in midfield with Ampadu at centre-back. How has our build-up looked recently? How has it affected us having our best centre-back, in possession at least, out? Hostie, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so one thing that I noticed from this game was the position of Archie Gray. So kind of like we've obviously touched on Strouk and where we think he might be able to come back in already with the Preston review. But Archie Gray took up a really interesting position for me. Kind of like he was ahead of Kamara and I felt like he wanted to be ahead of that midfield line and in between the midfield and defensive line. But that meant that in our build-up, we were just having Gruev, Ampadu and Rodon and then Kamara. And it just felt we were missing one player to help actually pull Norwich around in that area. And I think that's kind of where we had some problems. So I think against Preston, like Gray played quite wide and then this time he was asked to play narrower. But I felt like he needed to be a little bit deeper as well. And I think that would help us in build-up. I think we've kind of, because what we've been trying to do with this change is have Ampadu and Rodon create the space, pull the press around and then have Rodon or Ampadu kind of drive into the space that we've created is what we've kind of tried to do. And yeah, I just felt that in this game where, as we said, Norwich did quite well with that front side, with that front line press, we probably needed an extra body in there to kind of help us do that. That was my take on this, and I just think it can be improved a little.
Dan?
Yeah, I thought, but if you go back to the Cardiff game, one thing I thought they did really well was like Gruev and Kamara sort of moved Cardiff around and our build-up was really, really nice. And like this week against Norwich, we didn't see that. It was kind of all very static again. So we'd have Gruev dropping in and Kamara pulling out to one side and then, like you say, the other centre-back would launch into the gap and it would open up. I don't really think we saw that against either Preston or Norwich. So I'm not sure if that's the opposition not taking that bait or it's something we weren't doing. I don't really know. I mean, what do you think, Tom?
Yeah, so I think that's where kind of, because we've only got one player there and they've seen it once, they kind of knew to just, as long as they stayed a bit more disciplined, it was a bit fine. And that's where I think Gray probably, because he's that nearest player within the position, he should come in. Because at one point, I remember Gray kind of stayed where he was and Bamford dropped into the centre circle to try and add that extra body. And that was early on in the game. I think that was just before the goal. And that then we were able to progress the ball as soon as Bamford did that. So I just think that having that extra body and movement, maybe it's that we try and maybe rotate Kamara and Gray from doing that role. And that gives, because Gray's obviously comfortable in that position, that's why he's doing that role of playing further inside and a bit further forward, because he's got that mid. But you look at that first 15 minutes and I think it's like the third or fourth time that he's around the D area, and that's when we score, because he goes down injured around there, doesn't he, for when we score. And like, that's like the fourth moment within that first 15 minutes that he's found himself in that position with our build-up. I just think it's a bit too far forward for deep build-up because he's basically there from the get-go.
Martin, do you have any thoughts?
No, nothing really. I think Hostie and Stan have covered it quite well there. I've really enjoyed my moments of our build-up with Gruev in there. And just to touch on what we've missed with Strouk not being inside, I don't think we've missed a massive amount in Nancy. I think Ampadu has done a good job in that position and to do the sort of thing which Strauch was doing as well. And I'm fine with whichever one of them is in that position. Obviously, with Strauch, we have different angles to progress the ball. And that's the main thing that we'll be missing. It'll be a little bit harder. But I don't think Ampadu is too bad on his weak foot. I think he is able to play on his weak foot. So it's not really half much of an issue. I won't say he's both footed, but I wouldn't say left foot is weak. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does.
I agree. Can I just make one point? I mean, on strike, one thing we do miss is, I mean, he's got 5 goals this season in 25 games. So that's, and I think it was, I can't remember who it was online, just said he's an absolute magnet for the ball in the box. And he kind of is, isn't he? He's like, his anticipation and like the way he arrives in the ball in both boxes is really good. It's, you know, he's probably the best at the club at that. So I think we kind of missed that. And I do wonder if, you know, at some point we might struggle again, you know, defending set pieces. And, you know, I think we'd benefit from having those goals from Strauch. And just going back to the Grove point about Grove dropping into the defence and sort of emptying the midfield sometimes, I feel like it's been drawing Somerville into the midfield a bit, and Somerville's been making up the midfield free, hasn't he, at times? It's fine, it's working okay, but I prefer Somerville receiving the ball higher up and, you know, and that kind of moving from second phase to third phase rather than being this, like a second phase guy, you know, midfield guy, basically. So, you know, there are consequences to this. And I wonder if, I mean, Somerville's still playing well, but we've not seen any production from him, are we? Oh, maybe I'm talking rubbish. Like, he doesn't score a goal and I'm like, where's Somerville? for one game. But I kind of feel like we're drawing him out from where he's really dangerous at the moment. And obviously, we've got Firpo getting high and wide as well, so there's no need for Somerville to hold the width as much on the left. So, yeah, there's always a consequence, isn't there, of this kind of change?
I actually totally agree with that about Somerville. I think sometimes he's dropping maybe deeper than we'd like, but it doesn't really matter. He still impacts games really well, and he still, for me, he comes up with a few moments every game now where I'm a bit wowed, even if it's just a drop of the shoulder. He manages to wriggle out of something and play a nice pass, so really impressed with him. Just two really quick last points from me, because there's just some stuff that we missed off the running order that's just come to me. One of them, actually, you mentioned there, Dan, about our aerial sort of threat. I think Roden is someone who should get more goals than he does in his career. I think he's only got 1 or 2. And the reason for that is because I think he attacks the ball so well in our box. I think he should be doing better in the opposition box. I know there are different types of headers, and when you're attacking the ball to sort of get rid of it, it's very different when you're attacking the ball to try and score. But still, I think he should do better. And he's obviously really tall, so I would like to see him add some more goals to his game in terms of what you were talking about with Strauch. And then the other thing, just for all three of you, no one has mentioned that wonderful Archie Gray recovery, which is probably Norwich's most threatening moment in the second half.
I was going to say, before we go, can we mention this? So I've done it to you earlier on.
Yeah, there you go.
Point, you've taken mine.
Well, it was wonderful, wasn't it? It was brilliant. Such composure to even dribble out of it as well, let alone read the sort of tackle and the play and make it. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, he does really well when he gets into the box, and you just see him slow up to basically stop. He reads the fact that... I can't remember which player it was that made the break.
It was John Rowe, yeah.
And he just kind of is aware that he's going to try and cut inside, and he just handles that really well. The bit which, the only blemish on the guy's game that happened in that moment was Joe Roden. He tracked back with Adam Ida and then kind of mistimed. He kind of like didn't really go in properly, and he mistimed trying to out-muscle him off the ball, and he just fell on the floor during it. And that's when Ida then played it out wide to Rowan. Gray kind of obviously got there. That was the only thing that Roden did wrong for me during the game, and it was just something that I noticed at literally the last rewatch. Obviously, I just saw it last second. I was like, "Who was that? Who's just kind of gone in and not done any, made no difference to it? Not tried to hold up his run, not tried to do anything. Just kind of ran at him and then fallen over themselves." And I noticed it was Roden. So yeah,
none of that negativity, please, Martin. Just quickly, what can you recreate the audible noise you made when Gray made that tackle and dribbled out?
I don't think I could. It would just will have been just it was thank God, something like that. So yeah, that was the biggest moment where we could definitely have scored in that moment, and he did fantastic. Just the composure of someone his age, just not diving in that moment. Because I think if he would have dived in, Ida would have sidestepped him and would have either scored or set someone else up to score. But he just held his ground. Just didn't go to the ground properly, just ball, safely. And it's, yeah, it was fantastic. And so I just really enjoyed watching him. He's just growing all the time, and his defensive position is getting better. There was a couple of moments where he was a little bit out of position in the first half, but he soon corrects those. That's what I love about him most. When he makes a mistake, he just makes it straight away, and it's fantastic to see. And just before we do move on, I just wanted to give a little shout out to Tamara. I thought he was fantastic in this game. I just thought he was really essential to everything we did. I mean, he had the highest pass accuracy inside. He completed 57 of 59 passes, and he also had the second most progressive passes. So he wasn't playing it safe. He was getting the ball forward, and he was also progressing it and not losing the ball. So I just felt that he was just really good in this game.
To his best.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, exactly.
Anyone else got any last minute thoughts?
It's back on Kamara, actually. We didn't discuss Kamara from the Preston game, but like there was a lot of grumbling, wasn't it? They had a bad game against Preston. I just want to make the point, watching it back, he definitely got dispossessed 3 times during the game, but otherwise he was tip-top.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah,
people remember those either very big or positive or very big negative moments, and those actions are the ones that get sort of remembered the most. And I think a lot of people hyperfixate, and then they can, you know, actually extrapolate that to a whole game of performance when that isn't always the case. But anyway, yep, I think that's everything. I think I have to say just quickly, 2024 has been a great, fun footballing year so far. That's 5 games in a row now that we've won, 4 in the league, and we have 4 winnable games coming up before that Leicester game. So we're all feeling good, right?
Yes,
absolutely. Si, senor.
Yep, I think the only negative to come out of these 2 games is the potential injuries, but we don't know anything about that yet, so we won't discuss that too much. But yeah, just a quick reminder, the website for your Patreon is Dan.
It is patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Wonderful, but now that is everything for tonight. We won't be previewing or reviewing the FA Cup game because, Hosty?
Cup football isn't real football.
It's a Darren Driver quote. But jokes aside, we might, you know, start doing that stuff if we go a bit deeper into the competition, but not right now. Otherwise, we will be back next week where we'll be doing a bonus pod for all our lucky patrons. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, please do sign up. That'll be 4 of us on that one. So it should be quite a big one again. And we'll be back to preview Bristol City before Friday's league game at Ashton Gate as well. But for now, all that's left for me to say is to say thank you to Martin.
Thank you as well, Adam.
Thank you to Dan.
Thank you, Adam.
And thank you to Sexy. Hosty.
Oh, merci.
And to you, our dear listeners, thank you very much. Have a great weekend and a week, and enjoy the Plymouth game as well. Goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.